Leaders are all around us at all times and in every area of our lives. They motivate. They risk the first step. But what motivates a leader? In our Central Texas Leadership Series, KWBU has invited local leaders to talk with people they know who guide and inspire to find out what makes them tick. In this episode, Dr. Mia Moody Ramirez, professor and chair of the Department of Journalism, Public Relations, and New Media at Baylor University. Dr. Moody Ramirez is a nationally known expert on mass media representations of minorities, women, and other underrepresented groups. Hosting today's conversation is Nan Holmes. This program was recorded December 8th, 2021 in the KWBU studio.
It's so good to see you.
It's good to see you as well. Thank you for having me.
Well, you know, we've known each other, as we were reminding each other, for a long time.
Yes.
But unfortunately, we haven't been able to see each other.
Yes.
For
we've
a
known
long,
each other for more than 30 years.
Yes. And thank goodness for Facebook, because I feel like I have kept up with you, including your workouts in the morning.
Yes, which unfortunately I haven't been able to do for a few weeks because I fractured my foot.
Listen, that is hard to overcome.
Yes,
you
it
don't
is.
Realize how much you need your foot.
Yes, you don't.
But I want to talk right now about the influencers who shaped your early life.
Yes.
People who supported you in your journey to becoming a leader.
Mm-hmm.
Who would be?
I would say as a child, first and foremost, of course, my parents. They always taught us that we could be anything we wanted to be as long as we worked hard. They taught us the importance of a good work ethic. They instilled in us very early on the importance of working hard. So from an early age, I would say my parents. Then later, I would say some of my professors, then people in the industry, the news industry, and then to bring it full circle, mentors. And so specifically some mentors here at Baylor. I've had some wonderful influencers, Sarah Stone as a department chair. She was very instrumental in supporting me. Once I was named chair of the department, I was able to call on her when I needed help. Also at Baylor, Pearl Beverly.
Oh, I love her. Oh, my God.
She's awesome. When I moved to Waco, and I moved here to write for the Waco Tribune Herald, and when I told her I wanted to go to Baylor, she said, well, if you make that GRE score, I can help you get funding. And so that was how I was able to get 2 degrees from Baylor University, and Pearl Beverly has remained very instrumental in my life as a mentor. So there are so many people that I don't want to start naming names because I don't want to leave anyone out. But of course, those are some people who have been very instrumental. And then a community person who's been very instrumental in my life, I would say, would be Beulah Barksdale. I don't know if you've ever interviewed her. She's a historical member of the community. She collects dolls, and she documents the history of Waco. So those are some people who stand out. And, of course, there are many, many, many others.
Well, I know that you have an interest in issues pertaining to race, gender, and, as I read it, image repair.
Yes.
Did any of these people start you on that path? Well, how did you get interested in those?
I would say my professors are the individuals who got me started on those research paths. So at the University of Texas, my mentor was Stephen Reese. He was the mentor for my dissertation. And so he got me on the path of framing theory. He introduced me to framing theory. And I usually use that particular theory in each of my studies. And then some of the other theories I became aware of through other individuals, like Jan Dates. She's a former dean at Howard University. She's also a leader who has done really well. She started out in the industry, in the journalism industry, and then later on she became the dean of Howard University. I was matched with her through a mentoring program, and we actually became friends, and we ended up writing 2 books together.
Wow.
Yes, and so she actually introduced me to some of those theories that you're talking about.
Wow, that is just so interesting how mm-hmm. people can affect you from far away,
yes,
nearby.
And nearby, yes. Mm-hmm. So you, as I said, it's really hard, and that's why it's hard to start naming names, because you might leave people out, because you have people who enter your life at different periods, and it may be just for a moment, but they're there for that period of your life, and they're very important for that period. And so you never know who's going to have an impact on your life and why they're there for that specific period of your life.
And I want to turn that around. I'm sure you have been a person who has affected people and didn't even know it. Young people on a journey.
I sure hope so.
And your resume is really interesting to read. Did you always want to be a leader?
I didn't. That's not something that you necessarily strive to be. I don't think we strive to be a leader. It is something that people have always approached me and asked me to do. Even when I was in high school, I was always approached and asked to do certain things. Like, I was the president of my sophomore, junior, and then I ended up being the student body president of my high school. And so I was actually the first African-American female student body president of my high school, O'Brien High School.
Near
College Station.
O'Brien College Station.
So,
yeah.
And even in my department, I was actually approached. They asked me if I would be interested in first being the graduate program director, which is a leadership position in any department. And then I was approached and asked if I would be interested in becoming the chair. So it's not necessarily that you're telling people, hey, I want to be the chair of the department. People, you know, they approach you and maybe they see something in you that you don't necessarily see in yourself. And then you may not even feel that you're necessarily suited for the position, but God always prepares you if you're willing to step up. If you accept the position, I've always found that God will help you prepare will help prepare you for the position.
Well,
that's always been the case for me.
That is such a lovely way to put it.
Yes.
That you articulate that.
You just have to be willing to step into the position and do your best.
Well, you've always, as long as I've known you, like 30 years, been involved in the community.
Mm-hmm.
When
tried.
Did you come to Waco? When you came to Baylor?
I came to Waco in 1990 to write for the Waco Tribune Herald. They hired me in 1990 after first having an internship at the Waco Tribune Herald. They called me and said, we have this position open. Would you like to accept it? I was very excited for the opportunity. Of course, my parents did not want me to move to Waco. They were afraid, you know, for their young daughter to move to Waco. But I said, no, I have to take this opportunity. I have to branch off on my own. And so I accepted the position. I moved to Waco. And I'm glad I did. At that time, I thought I would just live in Waco for a year, but I ended up getting married, ended up having a child. You know, I worked for the Waco Tribune Herald for 6 years, which I loved. I loved working for the Waco Tribune Herald. It was a great experience. And then I ended up going to graduate school. As I told you, I met Pearl Beverly, and she talked to me about Baylor. And so then everything just fell into place.
Oh, it many roads lead back to Pearl.
Yes. So God, I'm sure that, you know, God worked that out, that I would meet Pearl Beverly.
Anytime I see her, I just feel happy.
Yes.
Well, you've been involved in the community, and you've also, from what I know personally and other people and Baylor, that you've played a role in helping young people mm-hmm. to have a vision for how things can be. How do you do that?
Well, I am the advisor for the National Association of Black Journalists. So through that, I mentor the students who are part of that organization. Mm-hmm. Many of them come back years later. One of them came yesterday. We had lunch because she just graduated from the University of Texas at Austin. So we celebrated. I took her to lunch. I was so excited for her. And she might possibly have a job at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. So I'm so excited for her. So they stay in touch with me. We celebrate. I you know, keep track. I write letters of recommendation, and not just for students in that organization, but for all of our students who are in the program. I'm friends with them on LinkedIn. If I see they've gotten a promotion, I congratulate them. I ask them to send me a blurb so that we can put it on our website, so that we can put it on our social media. So I try to encourage all of our students, all of our alums, and stay in touch with them, just to let them know that after they graduate, we're following them, we're staying in touch, so that they can stay encouraged.
That is wonderful. And I think our listeners out there who may be wondering, how do you do that?
Mm-hmm.
That's a very practical way.
Yes.
Of just doing that. It just takes a few moments to say to someone, atta boy, or
yes,
atta girl.
Yes, and they love that.
Yeah.
And then also in our department, we value retention. For our first year students last year, for the last 2 years, we actually had 100% retention, which was actually phenomenal during the pandemic. And so, you know, we were very proud of that, and that tells you that we're doing something right. Our faculty, we have phenomenal faculty in our department.
Oh, yes, I agree.
And then also we want to make sure our students get jobs after they graduate. And so that's something that, as the chair of the department, that's something that I see as important. That's my vision. To make sure that our students, that we, first of all, we retain them, they feel welcomed, and then after they graduate, they get good jobs, and that we stay in touch with them.
That sounds wonderful. Well, I know you've accomplished a great deal in publishing books and articles, speaking engagements,
mm-hmm.
And you have in this way address some serious issues, both local and national.
Mm-hmm.
What has been your most successful?
I would say probably I wrote a book that was called From Blackface to Black Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And that was probably the most successful one, and not because of the contents of the book, but probably because of the time that it hit. It hit at a time when we had several politicians who had actually had photos published in which they were dressed in blackface. So at that time, I was actually interviewed by several national publications. They asked me, you know, how should this be addressed? You know, this person was found in their yearbook wearing blackface. And so because of that connection of that book, I was actually interviewed. And so we got a lot of publicity because of that book. And that was one of the books that I co-authored with Jan Dates.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I saw that on the website,
mm-hmm.
and I thought, wow, that must be, talk about excellent timing.
Yes.
That topic is
we
so
didn't
timely.
Plan it, but it hit at the right time.
And what would you say your proudest moment has been?
Any time that I can write a book about a topic that can make a difference. I think some of my titles that have focused on the Black Lives Matter movement and the topics that focus on police brutality, the idea of people being killed and then social justice not being served, those have also been timely, and those are important to me.
Yes, they are very important issues.
Yes.
Someone must, you know, reveal them.
Yes, and we have to keep those on people's radar.
Yes.
Because what happens is we tend to get attention when something happens, when there's a case. We get a lot of attention at that time. Media will focus on that, but then it will die. And people think, oh, it's been solved. We don't need to worry about it anymore. But that's not the case. We need to continue to focus on these topics.
Well, what words do you use when, say, a young person or an adult tell you they want to make a difference?
First and foremost, I tell them that change starts with the person in the mirror. And so when you see something that needs to be done, you can make a difference. And some people will talk about social media being slacktivism. You know, you're not making a difference. You're not doing anything because all you're doing is sharing something on your social media. But that's not true. Many social movements have actually started on social media.
Mm-hmm.
And many social movements have actually started with young people. So young people can make a difference. So even here in Waco, some of the protests that we had after George Floyd's death, they were actually started by high school students. And they started, I think they used TikTok or maybe Snapchat, and they got the word out using those social media platforms. So don't ever think that you're too small to make a difference. You can make a difference.
You know, that is so true. And Waco, there's still much to be done. Many things, many projects still need leadership, need someone to pick it up and carry it further.
Yes, yes. So, and I think sometimes people will decide not to do something because they think, oh, it's just me, it's just one person, and I can't make a difference. But when you think about it, Dr. Martin Luther King was just one person. When you think about it, you know, when you think about these individuals who have had a huge impact, they were just one person.
Well, like Gandhi.
Gandhi and some of the others. Yes.
That's where
change starts. Mm-hmm. It's right. So don't ever think that you can't make a difference.
And there are so many nonprofits in town that could benefit from volunteers, mm-hmm. people to come through the doors. Look around to what speaks to your heart, I think.
Yeah, and then Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and sometimes even women. As women, we think that we can't make a difference. So we need to have more women in those positions so that they know that as women, we can make a difference, and we can be trailblazers, we can be role models. A lot has been done, but there's still work to be done.
And maybe there's some things to be discovered.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I love about young people. They, you know, those that are curious about things, they can unearth all kinds of things that we have just not, with our own eyes, have not been able to see.
Yes, yes. And we can't rest on our laurels. We can't say, well, I've done this, so that's enough. We have to keep moving.
I agree with you 100%. And presently, you are leading a sizable department,
mm-hmm.
with various areas of study, doing research, writing.
Mm-hmm.
How do you balance it all?
It's difficult. I am very thankful for the great faculty staff that I have, mm-hmm. because, you know, without them, it would be very difficult. You know, leadership is important, but I'm a collaborative leader, and so I believe in leading collaboratively. So I'm not this top-down leader who just, you know, tells people what to do. So I am more of a collaborative leader. I listen to feedback from faculty and staff. I believe in the importance of getting everybody involved in the decision-making process. We have done a lot since I've been the chair of the department. We have beautified the department. We've increased enrollment numbers. We've gone from 230 majors to 300. We've
Wow.
done some great things, and I don't say it's because of me as the chair. I say it's because of our great faculty. It's because of our staff. It's because we're all working together as a team. And I always say that teamwork makes the dream work. And so I am a mm-hmm. collaborative leader.
Well, it sort of like reminds me of good stewardship.
Yes.
And that this Girl Scout leader a long time ago believed in being in the middle, and the workers revolve around you.
Yes, yes.
So that is that what?
I believe that, because if people feel like you're using that top-down model, they're not going to follow you, and things are going to just go to pieces because they feel like, oh, it's just about the leader. And so you're not going to be able to get things done. And so I think that's why we've been able to get a lot done in our department, because we are working together collaboratively, and it has worked really well.
Well, I have what do you do when communication just doesn't seem to be coming all together? Do you ever have that word? Just getting good communication is so important.
I think communication, you have to make sure you have different channels, because some people have different ways of receiving messages.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to have different methods of communicating, because some people may receive messages better verbally. Some of them may receive messages better in a written format. So you have to have different ways to communicate with people. It's just like when you're teaching. As a teacher, as a professor, you might feel like you've said something several times, but you will have students who will say, well, you never told us this. And then you will be saying, well, I said this several times. How could you know? And so you're scratching your head. It's the same way as a leader. You know, you've said something several times, but you will still have individuals who have not heard it. And so you have to communicate messages several ways as a leader. And you have to make sure that people don't feel left out, because that's usually when you have problems in a department, it's because people feel left out. And so you need to make sure that you're including everybody and making sure that people feel included. Early on, I decided that I don't want to be surrounded by all yes people. And so you need to be able to work with people with different personalities. That's part of it. So some people, they will say it's a difficult personality, but not maybe it's not a difficult personality. Yeah. Maybe it's because they're not a yes person. And so you need to be able to work with people that have, maybe it's not a difficult personality, maybe it's just because they're bringing a different vision, or maybe they have different ideas. And so that maybe that's not a good label, you know, that they have a difficult personality. As if you're a true leader, you need to be able to work with all types of personalities. And for me, I grew up as the middle child. I had an older brother and a younger brother. So I am the mediator. I was the mediator. And so that's one skill that I bring to the table, is that I try to be a good mediator as a leader. And I try to listen to all sides and try to make good decisions as a leader in my department. And I know it may not always work, and I'm not perfect as a leader, but at least I try to make good decisions as a leader.
Mm-hmm. Well, how do you approach a situation where mistakes have been made and you have to make the things right? You have to make it right, because we're human.
Mm-hmm.
People will make mistakes. And this probably applies both to faculty and students.
I think the most important thing is to listen to all sides of the story, because people are going to want you to hear their side first. And that's one thing that I encounter as the chair of the department. People rush to you because they want you to hear their side first, because they think if you can hear their side first, they're going to have the edge. But I think it's important to hear both sides. And after you hear both sides of the story, then you're able to make a wise decision on how to best proceed with the matter.
And so what is your technique? You just let them take turns, or do you just make sure that everybody has some input?
Actually, at Baylor, we have other departments that will help us. And if it involves a student, we have the Success Center. And mm-hmm. if the student has a caseworker, I will get the caseworker involved, and the caseworker will actually tell us how to proceed with the matter. Or if it's a matter that's related to a grade or something like that, then I will actually get the dean's office. We can reach out to the dean's office on those matters. But if it's a matter that's related to something in our department, then I will just listen to both sides of the whatever it is, the issue is, mm-hmm. and try to make the best possible decision based on whatever both parties present to me as a chair of the department.
So you don't put it on the back burner?
No, I try to head off things right away.
Yeah.
Nip it in the bud.
Yes, as Barney would say.
Yes.
Yes, there's so much going on. It's like a beehive.
Yes.
But also, you must go to many meetings.
Yes.
How do you corral that?
We have, as the chair of the department, I have to go to a lot of meetings. We have Council of Chairs meetings. We have Division of Chairs meetings. We have just various committee meetings. So I do have to go to a lot of meetings. And And I also teach a class, so I have my administrative duties on top of my teaching duties, and I also do research.
Yes,
so,
I know.
Yeah, that's a percentage of what I'm supposed to do. And so I just have to juggle it as being the chair of the department, and I just try to do the best job that I can.
Well, what class do you teach?
I teach gender, race, and media. And that's, I've taught that class for about 7 years now. That's my favorite class. So when I became the chair of the department, they asked me, well, what would you like to teach? Because you'll continue to teach one class. And so I told them I would like to teach gender, race, and media.
Do you think that when things have evolved from when you first started teaching that class?
Things have evolved a lot. I think in 2014, that was when things changed. Things have evolved a lot. At first, we had a hard time having the class make because we have to have at least 10 students sign up for the class. So at first, sometimes the class would not make, but now I usually have a wait list for the class.
Wow.
And we're getting ready to add an online section. And we're looking into having more professors teach the class because there's so much interest. So that's the biggest change is the interest in the class. And the other change is the number of topics. There's a lot to discuss.
Well, I would say you have raised a lot of awareness that, you know, how you started with this class. But also, you're just the kind of person who wants, as a journalist, you want to make people know about certain things.
Yes, definitely. And our students write research papers. And so that's a way that they get to talk about anything that they want to. And so they learn about different topics. We talk about current events in the class. And so the students actually enjoy the class. And we look at social media. I think it's a good class.
Well, one thing I learned today that I didn't know is that you're a member of the board.
Yes.
You are a worker bee, and you always have been.
Yes.
And you didn't get to the spot where you were. But what made you decide to serve on the board?
Well,
of KWBU.
Well, up until this year, I have said no. I don't have time to serve on any boards. But I accepted this invitation because I strongly believe in KWBU. I first heard about NPR when I was a graduate student, actually graduate student here at Baylor. I was in a journalism class with Dr. Brad Owens, and he told us, he said, this is one good news source, NPR. And so that was actually when I started listening to NPR, and I've been listening to it ever since. And so when they reached out to me and asked me if I would serve on the board, of course, I thought about it, and then I said yes, because I strongly believe in NPR. And I do. I listen to it. I enjoy it. And so that's why I said yes. And I have been a contributor. I've actually been a contributor for a long time. Joe told me how long I've been a contributor. But I have been a contributor to KWBU for a long time.
Do you use it in the classroom sometimes?
Yes, we use it. All of our professors in our department use it because our students take current events quizzes. And so we give them several news sources that they should tune into to study for their quizzes. And so, of course, we mention KWBU or NPR. We mentioned some others like the New York Times and some other, publications, the Lariat. And of course, NPR is one of the sources that we mention. But I mention it like for my students, we talk about current events at the beginning of classes. And then I tell them that NPR should be one of the news sources that they listen to every day.
Gotta love it. Mm-hmm. Mia, thank you so much for coming today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Your work is so important, and you're doing some landmark fact-finding, and it's just been a total pleasure to visit with you.
Oh, this is wonderful to catch up.
This conversation was recorded December 8th, 2021 in the KWBU studio.